Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we're talking to Rob Womack and Catherine Roseberry. Welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Sure. You, no
great
problem. I guess the last time I really saw your work was years ago. And the first thing that occurred to me was, why in the world would anybody want to paint furniture? How did you guys get started doing that?
Well, I think I started it first. I had been in high school. I worked for an antique dealer. And I was interested in the history of furniture. And I had gone to VCU, got a degree in painting. And so I basically combined those two interests.
Okay. And how about you, Catherine?
Well, we were... I was working at 1708, mm-hmm. and Rob and I were together. And one day I came home, and he had painted a metal utility cabinet in our kitchen. He painted freehand little red pinstripes mm-hmm. all the way down this cabinet, all over it.
Right.
The next day I came home, and he painted something else. The next day I came home, he painted something else. And it went from there.
Right. Is there a history to this? I mean, I'm assuming you guys aren't the first ones who've ever painted furniture.
We're certainly not the first to ever paint furniture, but I think we do have a unique take on it, because what we do is we work on pre-existing pieces of furniture given from a certain period. And what we do is we research the period and the aesthetics of the time, and then that influences the ideas that go into the piece.
Can you give me an example of how something like that might work?
Say we find a piece of Art Deco furniture. We go to the library, and then we find books on textiles from the period.
Ceramics.
Other artists. Mm-hmm. And we look at the paintings that went on at the time. Sometimes we might even, I've done an ongoing series of interiors on some of my pieces, and I'll have a painting by an artist that's influenced us for that particular piece within the interior of the painting that I'm doing. So to give just sort of like a direct homage.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, is that very apparent in the work? I mean, you're not talking about actually reproducing somebody's work. You're talking about the influence of their work, right?
Influence of their work. It would be going into it. Sometimes it will be a literal reproduction of a piece.
You're talking about, though, just a painting, a reproduction of a painting within a broader...
A painting of an interior, for example.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I normally don't ask people to talk about what their work looks like, because mm-hmm. it's tough on radio.
Yeah.
You know, but your work is so mind-blowing.
Hard to describe?
Well, no, because it is, you know, when you think they paint furniture, okay, so they paint furniture, so they paint it red and green and yellow, and it looks pretty and it has shapes on it. But these are really works of art. I mean, you just had one accepted at the Smithsonian.
Yes.
Is that right?
That's right. It was.
I mean, these really look like, these look more like paintings than they look like someone who's, I just don't want the audience to think you're kind of messing around with painting furniture that weekend people paint their furniture. We are not talking about that here, folks.
We consider these paintings on furniture instead of painted furniture.
Right. So why furniture for you? I mean, why not, I think I mentioned this earlier, but why not canvas? Why not Luan? Why not, you know, why a bureau? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, you've got a bureau establishes itself. Hi, I'm a bureau. Okay, I am a functional piece of furniture. Now try and make something beautiful on me. I mean, that would seem to be an incredible challenge.
Well, Rob and I look at these a little bit differently. He did start painting on furniture first, but I look at it from maybe a more feminist point of view, where furniture makes up the domestic landscape,
okay,
which has traditionally been part of a woman's
right
life. And my work often relates to my experiences as a woman, as a wife, as a mother. And
talk about that a little bit. Tell me how your use of imagery or your work reflects that. How does that reflect?
It's often very autobiographical,
mm-hmm,
whatever is going on in my life. I've done work regarding my father's death. I've done work regarding my midlife crisis.
How do you do work regarding your father's death on a piece of furniture? I mean, I don't mean to sound flip, but
literal.
I think it's this is all very sort of...
But it's also referential.
Uh-huh.
That particular piece was very dark. It had fairly heroic figures,
mm-hmm,
representing life, death, mm-hmm, and the confusion that the living feel,
mm-hmm,
when someone has died.
Right.
So
all of the kinds of things that artists struggle with, all of the problems they pose for themselves, all of the exploration that they try to make through their work, all of the expression they try to make through their work, you're able to find on... I think you did that one on a desk. Is that right?
That was a desk.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just such a juxtaposition.
Yeah.
You know, you've got this piece about your father's death that talks about all the things you just mentioned, and it's on a desk.
Right.
To me, it's a juxtaposition.
It's a sort of desk.
Uh-huh.
This image, I don't feel, would have worked. The image that I used on this desk would not have worked on a different kind of desk. This desk was from the 1950s. Late 40s, early 50s, it
uh-huh
was molded plywood. There were no right angles. It was
right,
all
rounded. Right.
So the story flowed over the entire piece.
Right.
If a piece is very rectilinear, we're going to approach it differently.
Right.
And it may get a completely different kind of treatment. It will get a completely different
we
kind of treatment.
We call the rectilinear pieces television pieces.
Oh, good, our trade secrets.
Because
it's okay, we can edit that.
You
out,
have to approach it differently.
Right.
It's basically you would have an image on the front, and then you do something else to the sides. So the main focus of the piece will be on the front.
Mm-hmm.
So those are our television pieces.
You mean the difference between something that's actually rectilinear and something that is what? What's the opposite of rectilinear?
With
rounded
corners, for example, where the story can flow from the side to the front.
Mm-hmm. This has a lot to do with the history of furniture. And during the after World War II, when plywood was molded,
right,
you could get curved surfaces on your furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's furniture from the 1950s
right
is different from furniture from the 1930s. Just
right
stylistically. And we will then also look at those time periods when we're coming up with ideas. Oftentimes, we don't have any particular idea in mind,
mm-hmm,
when we get a piece of furniture. We are we let the furniture speak to us and its time period, its idiosyncrasies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it? What do the feet look like? What do the poles look like?
Right.
And
yeah, because you have all those things to deal with, you know,
right,
that most painters don't have to deal with. Most painters don't have knobs in the middle of their paintings.
Right. They don't have to think about
how... So how do you do that?
How a drawer divides up a surface.
Exactly. I mean, unless they're doing a diptych or a triptych or something, but you've got to deal with that. You've got to deal with keyholes.
Exactly. Well, I like
you've got to deal with the legs, like you said.
Those certain challenges, they throw it into the painting. For example, I was working on a really beautiful... mid-19th century piece. It was a big Empire chest of drawers. It had the original press glass knobs on it. These
really
were beautiful,
mm-hmm,
antique pulls. And it had 8 knobs on it originally, and it had 7 of these perfect, beautiful antique knobs. There was one missing. Well, I had remembered that I had seen a knob like that in Pennsylvania at an antique shop. I drove all the way to Pennsylvania to find the missing glass knob that would match this piece. This was before the internet. And,
and apparently before telephones either. Yeah, but.
And so I drove all the way to Pennsylvania. The shop, I didn't know their number. I didn't know what they were called. So I drove to Pennsylvania, and it was gone. So I come back home, and I'm looking, what am I going to do? I'm not going to replace these beautiful pressed glass pulls with something inferior. So there was I had in my collection a brass pull from the same period that was similar in design. It had a press design on it. And the piece, it was a 19th century piece, and so it was a dark, mysterious kind of piece with kind of a magic theme to it. So what I painted on the drawer that had the missing knob was a disembodied hand, like a porcelain mm-hmm. hand. And then I polished the brass knob and placed it as though the hand had transformed the pull into a different material.
Right.
And that's the kind of challenge that comes up with working on furniture. And that's the kind of thing, you know, we really like working with.
I thought you were going to say that you just painted a glass knob on the...
Well, that would have been another option, but...
Because people would be awfully surprised when they went to reach for it, you know.
Right, right. But yeah. I like these little challenges that come up with things like that.
All right, disasters. All right, most artists, none. Okay, most artists have a canvas in front of them. Yeah. You know, if it doesn't work, okay, you put the canvas down. You're dealing with, I would assume, in some cases, fairly expensive pieces of furniture. Is that true?
Yeah.
What's the challenge with that? And does it ever not work? I mean, do you ever end up with something and you just go, oh, and, you know, and
work them through?
Yeah, you can.
There's
just
been
really?
A few times when we started all over again and just paint it out.
You mean just paint out or strip it down or whatever?
Yeah. There have been pieces that were pretty close to being completed and we would just, you know, sand off the design and start all over again.
It's not.
But it doesn't happen often.
Really?
No.
We do a lot of planning in advance. We do a lot of research in advance on the piece. Once we get the germ of an idea, we go to the library. We are card-carrying members of four different library systems around here. Do a lot of research.
That's really interesting. I don't think I...
Artist's time period.
Yeah.
Materials used during the time period. Patterns of the time period. Anything, history of the time period, to help really further develop the idea. Then we almost always spend a lot of time at the drawing table drawing out generally to size what we need. The piece is prepped, stripped, repaired, whatever.
Right.
Primer or put on multiple coats of paint, lots of hand sanding.
So you're using a lot. What are you using? What kind of paint?
They're enamel, oil-based enamel paint.
They are oil-based enamel.
They'll last, you know, indefinitely. Right. And every layer is hand sanded. And so by the time, you know, we've gotten a piece ready for the artwork,
we know that piece.
It's a very polished.
How long does it take?
Polished
a piece. How long does a piece generally take?
Most pieces take about, I would say, 6 weeks, 2 months.
Really?
A big major piece might take 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you do them together?
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
We want to stay married.
Right. No, we have two different artistic visions that work here, Tim. So
Well, let's talk about that. Talk about. You talked a little bit about... Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, what do you think of this? It goes back and forth. We live in the same house. We're working in the same room. We're
how long you been married?
Was it
25?
24 years.
20-something years? Right.
Yeah.
25.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. So you're working together almost all the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah. Wow. So you were talking a little bit about stylistically, and you were talking a little bit about feminism. When I'm listening to you, I'm sitting here thinking, there are so many criteria. You do a lot of research. You do a lot of research in the past. You do a lot of research on the furniture. You do a lot of research on other artists in the time. Does that add to or interfere with your artistic expression? I mean, this is the first time I've sat down and talked to artists who do this much of that kind of research before they do a piece. I mean, most people are going in the studio, you know, they do something for a little while to get the bad work, and then they just start working. They have acquired, most of them that are any good, a lot of knowledge about art history so that they're not just, you know, making completely stupid things. But this sounds like a very different process. Does it help your artistic,
absolutely,
creative process? Does it interfere?
It's the impetus for all of our work. I think it is the thing we're most fascinated with is delving into art historical scholarship. I mean, and we'll get a piece, and that's the springboard for what we're going to go study. And so every piece is done that way, and it pushes us into exploring different areas of art history that we might not have been doing before. And so
every piece is different.
Yeah,
every piece is extremely different.
There might be similar themes in certain pieces, but every piece is treated differently because every piece of furniture is different.
Right. Do you see yourselves more as draftsmen, more as painters? I mean, do you understand what I mean by the distinction?
There's a lot of draftsmanship that goes into our work.
Right.
And drawing the painting out in advance is part of it. But I see them as paintings. I mean, we have.
So, is the creative process more about making the painting, or more about creating the overall piece? The overall piece.
Yeah.
That's really where the. So you'll get, for instance, you'll get a bureau, and the bureau will be of a certain timepiece, right?
Right.
And what happens?
Well, it depends. If we work on a piece from the 1950s, that's going to lead to a completely different sort of exploration than, say, the 1850s.
Right, I mean, do you immediately go to art history of the 50s?
It sits around in our house for a while.
Yeah. And
right.
We look at it.
At it in the raw, and then we we'll just sort of be glancing at it while we're working on something else in the studio, and the ideas will start to formulate.
But it doesn't necessarily mean the 1950s piece will then be reflected by 1950s... what's the word I'm looking for? Aesthetic.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, yeah. But probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And your work is becoming more abstract, or
no? I've worked
or the other way.
In abstract all through the career. I did a coffee table recently where I was painting on reverse on the bottom side of glass. And I was doing a Franz Klein type of painting.
Right.
And in order to get ready to do the painting, what I did was I laid the piece of glass on a black piece of cloth, and then I took baby powder and I coated the glass with baby powder, and then I would take a dry brush and make black marks showing through.
Oh, really?
The glass.
Right.
In the baby powder.
Right.
In order to get my arm loose.
Really?
And gestural.
Uh-huh.
And because that's not normally the way I paint.
Right.
And so I...
interesting.
And that way I could do like 50 variations, you know. I'd do one and take the brush, drag it through the baby powder, and the black...
Were you photographing them at all to see?
No,
you just planned.
I was really trying to get loose, and I did about 50 different configurations, and then.
And how much baby powder did that require?
Well, we had a big bottle of it left over, and
9 years ago,
and then at about the 40th one, I got to a painting that I liked, and then I did about 10 variations on that particular one. And then when it came the time to actually use the paint and the brush, I had it in my mind how I was going to do it and what exactly kind of stroke I would have used. And that way I got around the problem of I haven't been painting abstractly, you know, for decades in that manner.
Right.
But I was loosened up and ready to go. And so when I actually put the paint on the glass... It looked bright.
It really worked.
It did work.
Yeah.
So it was a great way of loosening up. And then, you know, another time I was looking at Italian Renaissance tiles and you know, painting, doing versions of my own.
So you got into your Italian Renaissance outfit,
yeah,
right?
I went to study, you know, Majolica tiles. And,
right.
So it depends on what the piece is suggesting as to what kind of creative direction we'll go into.
Yeah. Huh, interesting. So, where is your work now? Where does it sell? Where does it reside? Where do you guys show?
In the past
what's the most exciting thing that's happened recently in terms of your ability to sell your work?
Well, the last show I was in was at the Renwick Gallery, which is a Smithsonian Crafts Gallery, and in Washington. And
when was that?
That was in 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And accepted a piece of mine into the permanent collection, and there was a show of the permanent collection of furniture uh-huh. there. Lately, we haven't been showing in Richmond very much.
Is there a reason? Just because of the market? Or?
Well, we've had some...
Or you guys are just too expensive now?
We've had some really good clients lately uh-huh. that have been asking for multiple pieces.
Right, okay.
So,
we've been doing a lot of commission work.
We've been
have
doing
you?
A lot
and
of commission work.
Because our work is...
And so you've gotten known now... Far
yeah.
and wide, I guess.
Yeah, we've been yeah. doing some work for some
I mean, you know,
clients.
Like Hopewell, Petersburg.
People other than our parents know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
That's always a good sign in your career.
Right.
When someone besides your parents are buying your work, it's really a good sign.
So
yeah.
Because our work is so labor and time intensive.
Really?
It's very hard for us to build up enough work
yeah.
for a show.
Right.
And when we've been doing commission work for the past several years... That's where our work's been going.
Right. So you do it, it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah, which is too bad because yeah. we've done some really
yeah.
great stuff. That
yeah, you really have.
Haven't been seen in Richmond.
Yeah. Future stuff. Do you have any sense of how the work's going to progress or change? Or are you happy with the way that it's going now? Can you just not even answer that question?
We've never really gotten tired of doing this.
That's the great thing about yeah. this, because we don't feel like we get stale with it.
It doesn't sound like it.
We never know what the next piece will be.
Right.
Like.
What about working with a sculptor? One of the things I've noticed with sculptors who paint their work, and this is just my take, but it almost always just looks like a disaster to me. Now, maybe I just have, you know, old-fashioned taste, and I think, you know, hey, you know, it should be made out of metal and leave it alone. But, you know, now that you have sculptors who are using all sorts of high-tech materials, they're not using just wood, they're not using just steel anymore, they're using space-age materials. And some of them I look at and I just think, well, it's nice sculpture, but these people they don't know a thing about painting. I mean, this is really, they don't even know how to use color, you know. Have you ever been approached by anybody to say you want to collaborate with us?
No, but there's something that we're working on right now that
yeah.
Rob has been able to be a little sculptural with.
Really?
Yeah, we're working on a folding screen. It would be going in a Miami apartment, and it's basically five panels of it's an oak frame with a rod going up the center of it, and there are sculpted panels on the rod that will pivot.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And so
yep.
they're sculpted from MDF. Mm-hmm. It's a type of particle board.
Right. Real easy to
a lightweight.
Manipulate.
So there's a rod actually go through
yes.
the panel, so it's
it
not on the back
the
or the
panels.
Front. It goes through the panel.
Right.
So the panel sets on it. It's maybe 6 inches off the floor, and so you can actually rotate these panels.
Yes.
You rotate the panels.
Okay.
And that way we can paint different things on both sides.
Right.
And the sculpted forms that I took a file to this material and created these forms that looked like something that might have come up out of the sea. And then there'll be basically a surface treatment on top of these forms. And the interesting,
what did you make the forms out of?
It's called MDF. It's a lightweight particle board that's
okay.
very easy to sculpt.
Oh, so you're actually carving into this?
So you're talking about sculpture.
And
right,
Ryan
yeah.
sculpted these forms.
So I sculpted
oh, okay,
these abstract,
okay.
kind of Noguchi-like forms
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well,
that will pivot on these rods that are set within the frames of the folding screen. And that way, we'll have two paintings on. There'll be a painting on one side, and which we picture as being done in various shades of white, and then the other side of the sculpted forms will be done in colors, so that the different shapes can be pivoted to create different paintings on each side of the screen.
Right.
We looked at the work of William Basiotis. That was kind of the springboard.
Well, I have no idea who
he was. A 50s abstract painter.
Okay.
His shapes are undersea-like kind of form.
Okay. The word biomorphic is usually used for his work.
Right. Okay.
So it's a...
Sally. I will. I'll ask somebody who actually knows something about art. What about people who want to see your work? Websites, that kind of thing.
We don't have a website.
I tell people we live in a 19th century house and we do 19th century work. And it's been really hard for us to pull ourselves into the 21st century. There is no website yet, but we're working on it.
Yeah. Because it really is extraordinary work. I mean, it's very difficult to talk about on the radio, but it is breathtaking. I mean, you really don't, again, when you think, oh, they paint furniture, isn't that cute? Well, gang, you folks that are listening, let me tell you, it's way more than you could imagine, and I wish people could see it.
We're working on the website situation.
Okay.
And,
if somebody's interested in getting a hold of you guys, someone listening says, you know, God, I'd really would be interested. You're in the phone book? But under what name?
Both our names.
Both your
Rob
names?
Rob Womack, Catherine Riceberry, either one.
Okay. All righty. So they can get a hold of you that way.
I don't think it was mentioned. We work under the name Coloratura.
Okay.
Which is an operatic term which means elaborate embellishment.
Yeah.
And we chose that we've been doing this as long as we've been married, 23 and a half years ago.
Right.
And we still like the name.
Are you able to make a living from this?
Yes.
Yes. Boy, that's nice.
Among the fortunate.
I'll say.
Yeah, we feel very fortunate.
Yeah, you really are.
I was thinking about that, knowing that we would be talking with you. And years ago, my mantra was perseverance and low overhead.
Yeah. I was going to say.
That'll do
but,
it.
But, yeah.
It'll get you.
Yeah, because when you first started... I mean, as I recall, when you first started, I don't know if there's anybody else doing this in Richmond, but when you first started, I remember thinking to myself, now that's a strange direction to choose. I hope it works out for them. You know? Really? You know, because you know, they're going to paint furniture. How weird. But it has worked out both artistically, creatively, and financially, and it's, I guess, more than you can ask for pretty much in the world of the arts. And intellectually, just in terms of the way it stimulates you and keeps you going and growing.
Yeah.
So it's really sounds like a wonderful adventure you guys have created for yourselves.
We get to meet interesting people. Uh-huh. We get to spend a lot of time in the library, looking at books, and just learning a lot.
Yeah, good life. Good life. All right. Well, guess what? We're out of time. I told you that was going to zbuy. I want to thank you both for joining me today here. And I want to thank you folks who are listening for tuning into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. We look forward to seeing you on the radio next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring. You're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's indie radio. It's radio for the rest of us.
All right.